Thank you, culture lovers. I am with an outfit called Marvel Comics. And if you hadn't done that, you'd have seen a grown man standing up here weeping. You're liable to see it anyway, because as I look at this sea of hostile faces, I'm saying to myself, what on earth am I going to talk about for the three quarters of an hour that we've all been sentenced to?
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat!
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 152, the comic book show that lost at least half of its hosts to the Thanos snap. I'm Richard Gray. Where's everyone? Oh, that's right. Wait. I've got an idea. Here it is, David's place.
Don't say a word. You've come to sell me a subscription to the Saturday Evening Post.
No, I'm from the future, the year 2019. I came here in a podcast that you created. Now I need your help to get back to the issue 152.
Podcast? I haven't created any podcasts.
Okay, I must be too early. I'll prove it to you. See, this iPhone, it's the latest model, hasn't even been made yet.
It's a pretty mediocre bootleg fakery. They cut off the home button.
You gotta believe me.
So tell me, future boy. Who's the president of the United States in 2019?
Donald Trump.
If you aren't going to take this seriously.
All right, this is going nowhere. I'm heading back to 2019.
So I really, really, really hope they aren't going to be retconning anything here. This is just ridiculous.
No, they have to. It has to be.
Luke Skywalker has to be Rey's father.
It has to be.
Can't be. Be
guys,
stupid.
But who else was Rey? Guys, what are you doing? Have you been here the whole time?
Yeah, pretty much.
But we've got a show to do. We're in the middle of the intro right now. We're going to do our, kick-ass pick of the week, Avengers Endgame, the biggest cinematic universe movie ever since 2018.
And welcome to Film Actually for the 28th of April, 2019. I'm your host, David
Wrong
McMahon.
Show, to, David.
Star Wars? Star Wars?
Not yet, Dave.
What then?
This is Behind the Panels.
If you're looking for adventure this summer, escape with Marvel Comics, fight crime with Spider-Man, meet the Fantastic Four, and watch Captain America in action. May the Force be with you as you battle the evil empire in Star Wars. Discover the secrets of the South American jungle in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And with Marvel Comics, you're never alone because they can go with you in the car or to the park, even on a rainy day. Marvel Comics are your ticket to fun and adventure this summer.
Right, we're back. We all here? We're all accounted for?
I believe I'm David McVeigh.
Okay, you're David McVeigh. Who are you again?
Dave Wingard.
Right, okay, we're all accounted for. Fantastic. Welcome back, boys.
And this is why we're not actors, folks.
What?
Right.
No.
Well, we decided to get back into the back into the saddle one more time. We did promise you, we threatened you maybe even a year ago, that we wouldn't do one more of these. This is our second or third final show, I think, that we've decided to do. But come on, it's Avengers Endgame.
It's the Endgame. Yeah. Quite literally.
It really is the Endgame. We couldn't think of a more appropriate moment to do this show.
Agreed.
The other thing we're celebrating today is, as we're recording this, it's Dave's birthday. Happy birthday, Dave.
Happy birthday to you.
Let me make a wish.
And that is why we're not singers either.
We'll meet again.
Don't know where.
Don't know when.
I always think that it's don't know why. Don't know where. So we're basically going to do a cappella cover versions of every song that's ever featured in a Marvel film. Hey. What's that? No.
What's the matter?
I think we should stop that while we're ahead, quite
Brown
frankly.
Brown sugar.
No, this really is. This show, we did 150 episodes. We finished this up into 2015. And a couple of you have been really, really loyal and kept asking us if we were coming back. So that's why we came back last year for Infinity War, because we thought huge movie to come back on. And we almost did one for Captain Marvel.
But it seems and Hellboy
and Hellboy, Hecklad,
Hecklad.
But I think you know issue 152 is just a nice number to finish on because you know even though this is a Marvel movie, the number 52. Is a big kind of number in the comics world. And we did start, I think our very, very first issue started with the new 52.
Correct. So I didn't even put that together.
I just put it together as I said 152 right now. So that's the kind of lightning fast wit that you're used to on this show. It takes us 3 years to get there and think of these puns, but we get there eventually. So look guys, like it's been a year since we last did this. A lot of stuff's come out. I'm gonna say two things up front. One, this episode is going to be filled with spoilers for Endgame. I don't think we can talk about this.
I think what we're going to try and attempt is for the first 5 minutes of our review, what we'll do is we'll give you a quick summary of what we thought. And then if you haven't seen it, you can turn it off and come back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. But we can't talk about this without really getting nitty gritty.
I mean, we figure if you're listening to this episode, there's a good chance you've seen the film.
I think so.
And by the time this comes out, it's probably going to be out, you know, at least a week around the world. So you've had your chance.
Let's talk very, very quickly. I know that we've probably got this covered later on, but I think we should talk really quickly about the fact that this film is slaying the box office at this point.
I don't think I've specifically got it in our news headlines, but I was reading that they're on track for, if not a billion, close to it for the first week. Is that what you've heard, Dave?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah. So it's like here in Australia, for example, 10 million on the opening Wednesday, I think it was, which is unheard. Like that's the most any movie's taken the Australian box office.
Well, and to put this into perspective, the number one domestic film in the US is The Force Awakens. That took 900 and something million domestic alone. In its first weekend, it took 157 million. They're projecting for this film domestically, just domestically, 305 million at this point. So it's doubled Force Awakens.
Maybe I would have doubted that, but after having seen the film, I don't doubt it at all.
They're projecting 900 million to a billion for a first weekend. I don't think any film has ever done this.
The number of sessions they've put on for this is phenomenal.
I really want to go tonight, and I can't find tickets anywhere.
It's
staggering.
I know, even the night we went and saw it, like, I mean, you think if you want to go and see this, Australia's a special case because we don't have a lot of like big IMAX cinemas. So to see it at the one IMAX cinema in Sydney,
if you can see it, even in a LIMAX, you know, those ones that are in complexes, the screen ratio. This film was shot on IMAX cameras. It is designed for that format, which is not the 2.35 format that you normally see. No. It's cropped to the 2.35 format for the other cinemas. And it still looks magnificent, don't get me wrong. But there is something special about seeing this in its full IMAX glory. And let's face it, there isn't a better sound system in any cinema than an IMAX cinema.
No.
And the sound is phenomenal.
Oh, it rattles your cage. Yeah. And, you know, I think you're probably getting an idea from now that we're going to probably be pretty positive about this film at this stage, you know. Yeah,
I think that's probably a fair assessment, but we'll come back to that.
We will certainly come back to that. I mean, before we get to that film, though, it's been a huge, huge, huge year for movies, for comic book movies in the last year. Infinity War was the last one we talked about on this show. But a few other things have come up, and while this segment's called What We've Been Reading, I think we'll probably be talking a lot about...
It is a movie special.
It is a movie special, but I've only got one button, and I'm going to press it now.
Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
And all those clips were taken from movies.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think it's really weird for me because every time I hear that Danny Elfman theme, I think of this. I don't think it's like...
We've co-opted it.
Yeah.
At least for ourselves.
We took it back. Give it back to Marvel. It's a huge year. I mean, in the wake, obviously in the Marvel Cinematic Universe alone, you had Ant-Man and the Wasp and Captain Marvel. Don't worry, we will talk a little bit about that, David. But just to do a quick, and you know, maybe we can do a quick lightning round of this stuff. And just to give you a list: Deadpool 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Aquaman, Once Upon a Time in Deadpool, which was the other recut version of Deadpool 2, Spider-Man.
Oh, you mean the DVD extra?
The DVD extra, totally. don't preempt it, Dave.
Sorry.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was a huge one as well. Captain Marvel, of course. Shazam and Hecklad. I mean, Hellboy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the Lego
Movie
version.
Count Lego Movie 2?
Lincoln Boot. I mean, it had Batman in it.
Yeah, it's got. Yeah,
it did have Batman. Yeah. I don't know if it's actually a comic book movie, but wait.
But like, you know, this is in a year alone. So like, that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or like almost, and once you get to Endgame, that's 10 comic book movies in a year. That's a lot. We are in a golden age.
You didn't even
mention
TV.
TV is a whole different kettle of
And I can't believe our Gotham chickens. Gotham finished. Gotham finished, which I thought was going to run forever.
Gotham finished. We'll talk in the news later. The Arrow's announced its end.
Arrow's coming to an end.
So I mean, that's right. I mean, let's go through them though. So
and all the Netflix shows.
Definitely, we'll definitely be talking about that a little later on. Deadpool 2. Okay, so Deadpool. We all enjoy Deadpool. Yeah,
love Deadpool.
Yeah. So, Dave, let's start with you. What did you think of Deadpool 2?
I love Deadpool 2, like, more than the first Deadpool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. Like, I wasn't the biggest fan of Deadpool 1.
Yeah.
I liked it, but I thought the second one went more wild and crazy.
Yeah, like, they could. They kind of knew what they were doing with that stage. Yeah. They knew what the audience would take.
Exactly.
No, I quite loved it as well.
A lot of people thought it was, like, stupider than Deadpool 1, but I enjoyed it for being a lot more dumb than the first one.
Yeah. I actually really, really enjoyed Deadpool 2. I thought it was a lot of fun. I really liked... Particularly, I really like the idea of the X-Force and how fast that all just played out.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I still think... For me personally, I think Deadpool 1 is a sharper film. Yeah. I think they had something to prove, and they didn't have something to prove in the second film.
Mm. No, that's fair. But I think for me, I like, really did Deadpool enjoy 2 it. Is it's more the ending. I really, really liked the ending. So like that elevated it a little bit more than, you know.
And all I'm going to add to that is full Winnie the Pooh.
Fair enough.
I just like when the blood splatters the script. I think that's a really
funny thing. Yeah, look, there is a lot to love about Deadpool. We may as well talk about it while we're talking about Deadpool 2. Once Upon a Deadpool was basically a recut PG-13 for the US market, Deadpool 2, which was marketed as a Christmas movie, although there's nothing overtly Christmassy in it.
Yeah, I think it was just because when it was being released.
So. Yeah, and it's basically Princess Bride meets Deadpool with an adult Fred Savage being basically meets the plot of Misery, you know. it's fun, but the best bits in it are the best bits from Deadpool 2, and there's only a couple of the best bits, I guess, are where they sort of get self-referential about the whole Marvel Disney merger. Saying that, you know, Fred Savage says, "Oh, I prefer the Marvel movies," and go, "This is a Marvel movie." It's not a real one though. You know? I think you capped it off, Beth. It's a DVD extra.
It's a DVD extra. I mean, it really is something that should have just been as an extra in the DVD.
What do they call it? Like the branching options?
Yeah. I just, for me personally, one of the reasons why it didn't do anything for me was, I think what I loved about Deadpool was its irreverent R-rated sense of humor. And you take out the irreverent R-rated sense of humor and you kind of neuter Deadpool. Mm. So that was kind of, you go, what's the point?
Mm.
The reason we're seeing Deadpool is because it is crass and crude and violent and it's over the top. And if you take out the over the top, then you've kind of, it's just any other film.
Even Kevin Feige's been interviewed about that. He said, well, now that Marvel have got Deadpool back, what would you gonna make it PG for Disney? And he goes, no. I said, as they said to us when we brought Marvel to Disney, your formula is working. We're not going to change that. Yeah. He goes, why would I change a formula that's working?
You absolutely. Know? And to put a nail in that one, the head of Disney,
Bob
Iger has actually said that he is keeping Deadpool R-rated.
Yeah.
So, and Deadpool's front and center on the Disney website. Yes. So they are absolutely
day keeping. After the merger.
They would be insane. Deadpool on the front page. You got a $70 million film that took $700 and something million. Yeah. They would be insane to change the formula. Yeah.
Why would they kill the cash cow?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't kill the goose after it's laid the golden egg. Yeah. You want it to lay some more golden eggs.
But you can milk the goose if we want to run this metaphor. Yeah. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be shocked if they. Sorry to talk like yeah, over. Like
sorry to talk.
No, to talk over you.
Shut up, Dave.
I haven't done this in a year. Please. No, but I wouldn't be shocked if they. I don't know. I was just going to say I wouldn't be shocked if they just made like a Deadpool movie like over and over and over again and killed it that way.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, really that is the death of Deadpool is oversaturation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
like Wolverine kind of thing. Yeah.
Like doing a PG cut of Deadpool.
Deadpool babies.
Yeah.
Actually, that's good.
If they did a Deadpool babies movie, that'd be amazing.
No.
Don't give
the
ixnay on the ideas.
That'd be mad. Like, look who's talking with Bruce Willis.
No, no. Don't give them any ideas.
I'm going to move swiftly on to Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I watched again the other night, and I just love how small scale it is.
Mm. Absolutely. Look, I loved Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm but you know me, I'm unapologetic about my love of especially the MCU films and Ant-Man in particular. I love the first Ant-Man film. I really enjoyed Ant-Man and the Wasp. Once again, it's one of those things where you sit there and go, I'm not sure if it's quite as sharp as the first one, just purely because the first one had a very clear goal. It was a heist movie, and that was what they were doing. This is a little bit bigger in scope. It's a little bit broad. But that being said, there are sequences in the Ant-Man and the Wasp that are brilliant. Mm-hmm. Her fight in the kitchen with the shrinking and the growing and the running along the blade of the knife. You know, this is and the most unique car chase I think put on screen in the last 20 years.
So
there's a lot to love in this film. I adored it. So.
Yeah, and I was sort of delighted after watching it leading up to something as huge as Endgame, just how small the stakes were.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really, the Earth isn't going to get shattered as a result of this film.
It's Ant-Man's world, isn't it?
Ant-Man's world, yeah. Another one that we all got surprised by, I think, Aquaman.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh my God. I'll speak for Dave. Hello. Yeah.
All I have to say on it is just that I didn't avoid it because I thought it looked terrible or anything like that. I really wanted to watch it. It just passed. Yeah. I had a busy time.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. But it's just come out on Blu-ray now.
It has. It's been on digital for a couple of weeks. It's just come out in Blu-ray. I bought a copy of it. Yeah. I've rewatched it since I bought it. I still really enjoy it. It is cheesy filmmaking, totally. But I think it can be summed up by my son, who, by the way, since we last recorded, has gotten into AFTRS, the Australian
Film Radio.
So amazing stuff.
He's a legit filmmaker.
He's becoming a legit filmmaker, and boy, he's got some opinions now, let me tell you. It used to be like, what did you think of it? That's all right. Now it's like, Dad, you're an idiot.
We've been saying this for years, Dan.
Well, yeah.
It could be so much worse.
About Aquaman, I think he summed
it up. How about those dudes who had no shirts during Avengers?
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll definitely get back to those.
For Aquaman, I think he summed it up best when he said, there's so much movie here. It's like they just go from enormous set piece to enormous set. And you sit there and go, you could have had four films out of this. There's four plots going on.
Totally.
And they just decided, it's like James Wan, the crazy little Australian that he is, went, this is my one bite at this apple.
We may never get to do an Aquaman movie again.
I'm putting it all in. And he did. And he actually managed to make a really fun film. It's a 3 out of 5 quality-wise. I mean, it's like you sit there looking at it.
It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's all over the place. It doesn't make sense in places, but God, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, the complete polar opposite, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Now, once again, my son, his favorite film of the year.
And look, it was one of my favorite films of the last year. It was not like, I could go on for days about it, but it's the Spider-Man movie I always wanted to see.
Yeah.
We did Spider-Verse on this show back when the comic just finished, and it was one of our favorite arcs. I think I remember us all loving the hell out of it. Nick was on that show.
Yes.
It's just in terms of the representation of characters, but also in terms of the representation of the length and breadth of the Marvel universe within the Spider-Man confines, shows you can tell infinite stories. And I think they would be very wise to do more Spider-Man movies in that vein, both in live action and animation, because it sort of set the template for how you do introduce a whole bunch of characters without giving too much backstory, but enough to keep you engaged. I know people who had never seen read a comic who were kind of like total Gwen Stacy or Spider Gwen stands by the end of that film, you know.
And I mean, let's face it, the film went on to win the Academy Award for Best Animated Film for good reason. I mean, this is also one of the most uniquely animated films that we've seen in probably since Bakshi came along and did rotoscoping. You know, this was a really, truly unique experience in the way it looks, the way it's colored, the way, I mean, it's just amazing. It is an amazing film.
It, it, I have nothing to add.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip over Captain Marvel because I think I'm going to hold that to the end because I think you'll have a few things to say about that.
No,
David.
I do.
Shazam was another big surprise for us. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, I loved Shazam.
DC made a good movie.
I'm going to say since 1979 Superman, best DC film made.
Yeah. I almost missed Shazam as well, and Dave dragged me to Shazam, and it was amazing. I loved it.
And that's a bold statement because we had The Dark Knight and we had Batman Begins. Those are all great films. I'm not holding anything against any of those films, but there is a sheer joy about Shazam where you watch it. It's the same joy I got when I saw the first Captain America, the first Avenger film. It's that sense of, oh my God, they get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was just this. Joy is the only word I can say. And it's so tight.
Yeah.
This was a tight film. The script is great. The characters are well-rounded. The performances are top-notch. I had doubts about Zachary Levi going in.
Mm.
Completely pulls it off. He's a total man-child. Yeah. And it's amazing.
And I without spoiling it, if you haven't seen it, and I think sufficient time has passed, but where that movie ends is such a perfect moment for showing you where the Marvel, the DC universe can potentially go.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. After that.
Yeah.
Shazam 2 can't come soon enough.
Oh, please. Yeah. I know. For me, it's sort of like one of the things I really liked about Shazam was the integration of visual effects.
Yeah.
There's visual effects are everywhere in movies now, like from top to bottom. And like the way they use it in Shazam is just like really special, I think.
And
like it brings the special back into it. It's not about how much of it there is. It's just used so...
Agree completely. And the integration of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never did it feel cheesy. I mean, when you've got... Sorry, minor spoilers, but when you... But it's on YouTube. It's a YouTube clip that they released.
Yeah.
When you've got that scene where they're both sitting in the air and Sivana starts to give his big impassioned supervillain speech. And you got Shazam half a mile away going... Yeah. Are you talking? I can't hear you. He goes, stuff it. It's like, it's just brilliant. Yeah. You know, it's just brilliant stuff.
Hellboy. Now, I know you and I saw this together.
Yeah.
But Dave, have you had a chance to see it yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I can recommend it. Again, it's in the big dumb fun category.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a great film, but I would watch, you know, Mila Jovovich in her... for hours in anything.
I thought you were going to say in her underwear, but you know.
Well, I mean, I think we have many times. but no, she's fantastic. I think she might actually be immortal at this point.
Yeah,
I don't think she's aged a day since Resident Evil 1. But it's bloody as hell. Like it's a hard R.
It was
an R in Australia, which means it was, yeah.
It is a batshit crazy film too. It's just like when you don't think it can get any crazier, they'll go, oh, there's also this, and you go, oh, of course there is.
Speaking of multiple plots,
yeah,
like it's got all of them.
Yeah, it's used all the plots, and it's just throws everything at the wall, and if it doesn't stick, it doesn't matter because something else will.
I mean, when David Harbour's not, he's great as Hellboy.
He's no Ron Perlman, but
no.
And that's the biggest thing that this film has against it is it's way too close to the Guillermo del Toro Ron Perlman Hellboys, which were really good. I really enjoyed those. I thought they were really good versions of Hellboy. And there's too many similarities in its design, its look, and so forth. It almost feels like it's trying to be a sequel and a reboot at the same time. So there are problems with the film.
Oh,
but definitely. Overall, it's far better than I thought it was going to be.
Look, it's a big, trashy comic book adaptation. It does its job.
And the trailer is shit.
The trailer did not trailer well. Final film we'll talk about, apart from Endgame, of course, is Captain Marvel. And I think it's safe to say, Mr. McRae. Well, I was going to say, it's safe to say that you might be the biggest Captain Marvel fan in this room.
I loved it. I just thought they just nailed it. They, for me personally, I know I am not, I'm not the one who stands and everybody goes, yeah, absolutely. Because I can tell you right now, my son has seen it 3 times, but he's not a big fan.
Interesting.
And he kept going back because he wanted to know what he was missing.
Yeah.
And he just, by the end of it, he said, it's just not that good. He just wasn't that into it.
Look,
he thought the characters weren't very rounded. He didn't think that the plot was very well developed. I mean, he came up with a lot of really good reasons. He, like I think a lot of us, was really annoyed about the backlash and all the political correctness and, you know, and everything else that was being bandied around at the time when it was coming out. forget all of that and just look at it from a film point of view, this is a really fun film. It captures, for those who are Captain Marvel fans or Ms. Marvel fans from the earlier days, this is Kelly Sue DeConnick's run. This is Marvel now. Mm. It's that generation, and I just enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought they really nailed it. And I always judge superhero films by the superhero moment. Anybody who is listening to this knows the superhero moment. Totally. That's the moment where you get that lump in your throat and your eyes well up because you just sit there and go, oh my God, this is the moment.
So the entire back half of Endgame, yeah.
Yes.
Endgame actually has probably the superhero moment of all superhero moments for me, and we'll talk about that as we go on. But to give you an idea of a superhero moment, and this is minor spoilers for a film that's a year old, so if you haven't seen it, your problem, but it's Thor's arrival in Infinity War. That is a superhero moment where you sit there and go, oh my God, I'm going to cry at this point because that is just so magnificent. Or Captain America on the railway platform in Infinity War with the music cue kicks in. That's a superhero. So Captain Marvel has several superhero moments. One of them, of course, is when she finally ignites into the whole binary. Mm-hmm. I think Samuel L. Jackson says, you are aware that you're glowing. You know, look, I just loved it. I've seen it 3 times.
Yeah.
I will see it again. I'll buy it on Blu-ray. I adored it. I thought it was fantastic. My only criticism, she's not wearing her sash.
Which Marvel makes amends for.
It does. And it's funny, Andy Park, who does, if you're familiar with that name at all, he's one of the concept artists. He's got an Instagram you can follow. He's responsible for, we've talked about them on Geek Actually for years, and so he does really photorealistic paintings of the costume designs and stuff like that. And he says he went through many iterations, and he actually put up on Instagram last week a shot of Captain Marvel with a sash and said, see, I did try it with the sash, just couldn't make it work. Mm. He said, maybe sometime in the future. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
But he tried and he couldn't make it work. But the sash is incredibly important for that character. She's worn it since her inception, even back to the Ms. Marvel days. And so, that was my only criticism.
Yeah.
That film.
Look, I had a few problems. I think there's a few narrative shortcuts the film takes, and I don't think it's a flawlessly built narrative, but I think it's still an excellent superhero movie.
I just want to
quote myself briefly, which was, I'm really quoting the film. To everyone who tried to review bomb Captain Marvel before it came out, she really answers them in the film where someone says something to her and she goes, you know what? I have nothing to prove to you.
Yes.
And this is what this film is basically saying. We have nothing to prove to you. We stand alone as an awesome superhero film.
And $1 billion at the box office.
Totally. A few people agree.
Few people agree with this.
Yeah, so. Well said. Yeah, because to me it's weird how like every time one of these things happens, people have to conflate like their own bigotry with the craft of the movie. And it's like they're not really the same thing.
No.
You know, and I think when it comes to Captain Marvel, like there are some sloppy things in the first half of the movie that we don't have to like couch it in like, you know, like these weird like alt-right.
Yeah.
Like not to get too political, but we can just say that it was poorly written.
The thing is,
it's fine. Like, like films make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like.
And there's very rarely are you going to get a perfect movie.
Yeah, not every film comes around that just like does all this crazy cosmic shit that you can't
see. If it's not for you,
I think it's Skrulls and all this awesome
Christmas
stuff. Like.
Yeah, come Christmas time, everyone really loves fruitcake, right? And pudding. I can't stand it, right?
Yeah.
But it's not the fault of the pudding.
Yeah.
It's my personal preferences don't run towards fruitcake. Yeah. Just because I don't like fruitcake doesn't mean fruitcake is bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically what you're saying, people.
And I mean, if you really want to get down to it, the huge backlash fell against her. It started before this because it was all, I think it started with Kevin Feige saying that she was the strongest character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. And of course, everybody lost their minds. How dare you say that? Yeah. You know, blah, blah, blah. She's only a woman, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, that's what they were effectively saying. They didn't say that, but that's effectively what they were saying. Yeah. Then, of course, there was the infamous press conference where Brie Larson said some stuff, which I'm going to just throw this out there. Mm-hmm. If you've only listened to what the YouTubers have to say about what she said, then you have only heard half the story. As soon as I started hearing there was a backlash about what she said,
the first thing
I did was actually went to YouTube, searched for it, and it's there. You can actually see her speech.
Amazing speech.
And it's an amazing speech, and she doesn't say that 60-year-old white reviewers shouldn't be reviewing films. She doesn't say that at all. She's not saying that you shouldn't be watching or enjoying these films.
Yeah.
All she's saying is that there should be more diversity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that is absolutely true.
And then sometimes particular films have particular audiences. We could go on about Captain Marvel.
Can I just say one more thing about one more thing really
quickly? I will allow it.
I came across one of these anti-Brie Larson videos recently. I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch one. Like, you know, who cares, you know? So, but it immediately like starts. The very first thing out of the person's mouth is, you know, the hashtag Brie Larson is doing really well for us right now. And we're getting so many views for it. So that's why we're doing another video, because we're getting a lot of views and people want it. And for me, that was like, okay, that's all I needed to hear.
If we didn't carry like, the tag on this show, I would tell him to go.
Yeah. You're just creating a narrative to get views.
Absolutely.
That's it.
I've become a huge Brie Larson fan prior to Captain Marvel. I just watched Unicorn Store. If you haven't watched this.
I haven't yet,
If you haven't watched this on Netflix right now, she directed it and is starring in it. It is charming.
With Nick Fury?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is charming. I watched it the other day. I thought, this is really, really cute. And made back in 2017.
Just go watch Room.
Oh, go watch Room. Yes.
That's all you have to
do. She's phenomenal. Yeah.
Like, she might be terrible in every other movie ever, for all we know, but just watch Room.
But she's not.
Just watch Room.
I'm going to push the show along.
Whatever.
We are going to do a few news headlines, kind of.
So we never pre-read any of this.
This is because we didn't review Captain Marvel. We're being punished for it right now.
Absolutely.
Are we going to read through this, or are you just going to run us through it?
We're going to read through this. You and I are going to do a back and forth, because that's what the fans expect, David.
And then are you going first, or am I going first?
I think,
we haven't rehearsed this at all.
I haven't even read them. I don't know.
I think I go first on this one.
First.
Okay, just be paused on your little dial for turning the sound
down.
Oh,
yeah,
down.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Remember how to do a show, David?
I forgot how to remember podcast.
Remember how to do a show? One of us is, you never studied.
No, I didn't.
He's got nothing to prove.
Well, they send me somewhere special.
All right, we're going to attempt to do news. If it all goes wrong, we'll see you next year. All right. And Disney have now acquired 90% of the world's resources. In addition to Pixar, Marvel, Lucasfilm, and Fox, they've recently acquired the rights to that drawing on the fridge that your kid did for about $60 billion.
Speaking of Disney, we all knew exactly who survived Endgame in advance thanks to the announcement of original series starring The Falcon, Winter Soldier, Loki, Scarlet Witch, and The Vision, and Hawkeye on streaming service Disney+.
And following the cancellation of Daredevil, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and The Punisher, and The Defenders from Netflix, that streaming giant will now be known as Disney Minus.
Guess what? The Sci-Fi Channel series Krypton is still going. Will wonders never cease?
Exclusive. There's a good chance that you have been cast in the Suicide Squad sequel. If you're unsure, check your email.
CW's Arrow will finish its 8-year run in 2020. This means two things. Either Stephen Amell is running for US president, or Richard is planning a revised edition of Moving Target. The history and evolution of Green Arrow available now wherever obscure books are sold.
And finally, a man was assaulted and beaten outside of a Hong Kong cinema for revealing spoilers to Avengers Endgame. So it's time for our latest PSA. They're just movies. Nobody needs to die, people. look, let's touch on it briefly, because we said that we will have a few spoilers.
Firstly, just really quick, this speaking of Disney thing, who survived Endgame, that's not a spoiler. Just in case,
no.
In case you were wondering, and now we're going to go on about how like, you know,
these were all major things that Disney announced to you know, basically for their shareholders.
But that in and of itself is inaccurate if by some odd chance you haven't seen the film.
Yeah, relax, we're not spoiling yet.
Look,
Speaking of Krypton, by the way, I've seen none of this series
because
I look at it and go, okay, so we're going to watch a series about a whole bunch of people with no superpowers. So it's 90210 on a different planet. But
who's looking forward to Pennyworth?
But the one thing I will say about Krypton is apparently...
Just quickly on that, Alfred is a way better title.
Alfie. Oh, no, wait. Someone's
How many people are going to tune into Pennyworth and think it's about a clown with a red balloon? That's what I want to know. So Krypton, though, apparently has Brainiac and all sorts of weird batshit stuff in it. I feel like I should be watching this
show. I know. I need to get back to it. I need to watch the last couple of seasons of Gotham. Like, I tuned out at a certain point, and then when it got really good, apparently.
Yeah.
Or at least so batshit that it was, you know,
apparently worth watching. Season, was it 5? The last season?
Yes.
Yeah, apparently it's really good.
Yeah, I've seen like clips from it and it looks great.
I've been hearing lots of stuff about season 5.
I was going to say write in and correct this, but we won't be checking anything after this episode. This is the end of Behind the Panels. So really, the only opinion that counts at this point is ours.
Yeah, exactly.
There will be other shows, but yeah, more on that later.
We'll be around. It's not.
So hit us up on all the places that we'll mention later. Look, I think we've spent enough time talking about things that aren't Avengers Endgame. I just flicked a paperclip shaped like a T-shirt across the across the room. Thanks, guys. Pillow fight.
Support your brick and mortar store.
So without any further ado, I think we're getting time to get into this kicking ass pick thing week. I can't remember what we call this. Let's just do it.
Okay.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Even if there's a small chance that we can undo this, I mean, we owe it to everyone who's not in this room to try.
If we do this, how do we know it's going to end any differently than it did before?
Because before you didn't have me.
Hey, new girl, everybody in this room is about that superhero life. And if you don't mind my asking, where the hell have you been all this time?
There are a lot of other planets in the universe. And unfortunately, they didn't have you guys.
I like this one. Let's go get this son of a bitch.
That says it all, really.
Just gave me goosebumps.
Oh. Is it just me or in isolation that Ruffalo line delivery sounded really terrible? like yeah. Divorced from the film?
I know. Yeah.
If we don't do this, what is everyone going to do? Like, play it again. Like, just up to that bit.
Oh, I can't.
I can't.
That's the way I've loaded it.
People should just go back like 30 seconds.
Yeah, hit the 30-second rewind on your iPhone right now. We'll wait.
If we can't do this.
We'll be here when you get back. Right, Avengers Endgame.
New girl.
I like this one. I'm just gonna. Okay, right. From this point, we'll do a little bit of our thoughts on the film, and then after that, it's spoiler heaven.
Absolutely,
because we have to. I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about at the last half of this film, which is goosebumps, like more goosebumps than Captain Marvel, which actually had a character named Goose to bump over. So, look, guys, I think it goes without saying we freaking loved this thing. Like, 5 stars across the board for me. Mm. Total bias, but just absolutely love it.
I agree. I concur completely. I think it's a 5-star film. I think it is an amazing, amazing cinema experience. 3 hours and 2 minutes long, and yet just flies by in the blink of an eye. It is a remarkable cinematic achievement. I think when combined with Infinity War is as impressive as, let's say, Lord of the Rings. You know, it is.
I think so.
I think because Lord of the Rings, you don't take each individual film in isolation. You look at it as a complete package. And I think Infinity War and Endgame, you bolt the two together and you have a complete package. And I thought Infinity War at the time was brilliant. Now this, with the conclusion, is even better. I've seen it twice already, and I will see it a few more times, I think.
Look, I actually saw it twice on the first day.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And I can quite happily say
that's 6 hours of movie.
6 hours. And even in the second screening, which was the one I saw with you guys, I didn't feel as though it was dragging in any way, shape, or form. To put what you just said in context, this is the culmination of 22 movies, 11 years, and about 2,754 minutes of cinema.
Yeah.
This and what I think the amazing thing about Endgame is that you feel all of those films in this one package, and that you're not just watching the second part of a story, you're not watching the end of a series, you are watching the culmination of 11 years of world building.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is the big explosive annual finale that you've been reading in a year-long event in the comics, you know.
Correct.
Except it took you 11 years to read this, you know.
Well, it takes me 11 years to read some comics. Dave. Right?
Yeah, like I'm still living in that like never realm kind of thing, because I've only gotten the chance to see it once. I'm like dying to see it again. But in my mind, so much of it doesn't really feel real. Like I'm like amazed that they made it. Like, just thinking about what occurred in that movie and like how ambitious it was and how much it nailed everything and how complete I feel after like 20, you know, two films. And like, it's a staggering achievement in my mind. Like,
they nailed it literally with a hammer.
Yes. Yeah. But actually, to me, it's sort of like I have conversations about it and it doesn't really feel like that happened yet. You know, it feels like this movie is still to come, like, if that makes any sense. I can't contain how much movie there is in my head.
It's like a thing that we talked about. It's a thing we talked about outside just before we started recording, where I said that if Kevin Feige turned around right now and said, "I'm retiring.
Yep,
that's it. I'm done. I've concluded what I wanted to do."
Yeah.
And as far as the MCU as it stands right now, it's done.
Yeah. Yep.
We're not like they do with Star Wars, and it's gonna be 20 years until they make another. I'm satisfied.
Yep. Yeah.
That was a completely satisfying conclusion to 21 films, 22. 22 films.
What is 22, the 22nd film?
22 films.
Yeah.
That I'm completely satisfied. Yes, of course I'm looking forward to more. Mm. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But
and we know the Spider-Man.
Yeah, coming. And with the Spider-Man, there's going to be more. Even Chris Hemsworth has said that he's very interested in doing more Thor now that they're doing stuff after Ragnarok and how they had so much fun with it.
Yeah.
He is interested in doing more
And we'll
Thor.
Get into where those characters are at later in
the absolutely.
Show.
Yeah, absolutely. But we know that there's going to be a Captain Marvel 2. After $1 billion, they're not going to not make another one. I guess there's going to be a Black Panther 2.
The question is, will there be anything like this again?
That is the question. And that we'll wait to see what happens if they do the big team roundup at the end. That's been very successful for them, so I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Would it be the new Avengers now? I don't know. You know, it's like, who knows where they're going?
I find it hard to believe that in modern economics.
We've got to dance around spoilers a little bit. Too, because we're not yet in spoiler territory.
No.
But there are some questions that remain.
Of course,
and we can't talk so like freely about the future.
We'll get to
this quite yet.
But when we get to that, I mean, it's safe to say that you know the MCU has changed as a result of this film, and I'm excited to see if they continue it. And the basics of economics will dictate that. Given that Marvel has just spent $70 billion buying another company. They're going to be wanting to invest.
Disney, not Marvel.
Sorry. The Disney books are not Marvel. Yeah. Sorry. Disney has just spent $70 billion buying another company.
Yeah.
A lot of their product is going to be surefire hits.
Yes.
And so they are not going to turn their back on what is looking to be an easy $2 billion picture.
Yeah.
They're not going to turn their back on that universe.
Yeah.
They can't.
I'd like to go into it in the spoiler section like a lot more in depth, but I think the economic like – choices like the economic pressure like sort of dictated the storyline that we got in many ways and I think we should go into that later
we'll
in
talk
spoilers.
About that. Okay.
I think
because
so.
like it's not it's just a really really amazing illustration of how like the gigantic mega blockbuster doesn't have to be corporate garbage even when dealing with
I agree,
so many of the storyline decisions in Endgame can literally be put down to economic.
Yeah,
I think like almost. Choices. Let's face it. I think
I wouldn't want it any other way. You know?
I think in commercial filmmaking in general, whether it be Endgame or Star Wars or whatever it might be, let's face it. I mean, 90% of the decisions will be economic.
Yeah.
I mean, they are going to be about what can they sell, how well is it going to do at the box office, how many sequels or spin-offs can we spin off from this, blah 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 blah. There's all that is without question. That's how Hollywood works.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, you know. That being said, I'm with you. I don't see anything wrong with big commercial blockbuster cinema. Big blockbuster cinema is entertaining and pays for smaller, important films. So
it's interesting because I had this conversation on social media, you know, where all rational conversations happen. I was talking about something completely different and someone sort of posted, oh, you know, the Criterion Channels has launched, you know, so if you need an antidote to, you know, if you're sick of watching blockbuster, you know, films or, you know, you're sick of that, you know, just this is your alternative. And I sort of called him on it because I said, well, look, I saw whatever it was, 200-300 films last year. A dozen of them were superhero films, you know, whatever it was. The rest of them were not. And I see everything from obscure Japanese cinema through to, you know, the big blockbusters. And I love them all. You know, it's not a binary thing. You can enjoy two types of films.
Yeah, here.
But and I don't think that there is, you know, I think that there is a knee jerk, you know, it is binary. You like one or the other.
That's
you can't
are you
both.
Star Trek or Star Wars? It's ridiculous. You can like both.
I'm a geek by definition. Yeah. I like both of them.
Yeah, it's got spaceships and they fly through space and they solve things and they fight things and I like it all. It's good, you know.
And you know, obviously the Orville is the greatest Star Trek Next Generation series of our generation.
Orville is so good. Oh,
we need to do a separate Orville show, I think.
Like it's like The Simpsons, like that Halloween episode, you know, like just don't look.
Yeah.
Just if it's such look. Like for me, Avengers is sort of like, especially now, I think I said this for Infinity War as well, where it's like at this point, people.
Yeah. Like, but just really, don't crap on the people like, who do like it, you know?
Like it's 10 years. Like,
the other thing we should really say is there was a review that came out, and once again, social media is a fantastic place. there was a review that came out on Twitter. I won't mention the names because I really don't want to dignify them, but basically said this was barely a movie, right? Just he went barely a movie, blah, blah, blah. Just shredded it. I'm going to say at this point that, you know what, all of his arguments were about the fact that you were required to watch 21 movies before and blah, blah, blah. Do you know what? That was the model that was set out.
Yeah.
This is not a normal film.
And I've responded to that to other people saying it's like tuning into Game of Thrones season 8 now and going, well, who are these people?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is a series of films of a connected universe where everything builds on the next thing. Yeah. If you are coming into this or you don't want to be part of this 10-year journey, if you don't want to be part of this, don't watch it.
And there are ample
opportunities. But don't spoil it for the rest of us, you know, who are enjoying the hell out of this.
Thing is, not if it, or what's the line we always say? If we don't like something, it's not for me.
It's not for us.
You know, and that's it. That's really what you need to think.
Ingmar Bergman, not for me.
And the thing is, though, I like Ingmar Bergman, but I also like huge balls-to-the-walls action.
I actually do like some Ingmar Bergman.
No, like, you know, I know you do. But and it's
the weirdest thing for me is like we're sort of in a post like criticism world almost because of social media. Like no one, no one ever wants to discuss anything remotely akin to craft.
No, it's completely binary. It's like, hate it, love it.
You never hear anything about how the acting was, how the editing was. Like you hear nothing. Nothing, nil.
And I know this is something you want to talk about in more detail, Dave, because I know you're a huge fan of his work, but what was really, really comforting to me is seeing after the US premiere, social media, one of the trending topics was praise of Alan Silvestri's score. Yeah. And it was really lovely to see that people going, yep, this huge mainstream audiences recognizing how important that theme is to their enjoyment of the film. I had a friend I'll call him Matt Amon because he got me into comics in a lot of ways. Like he was my gateway friend who got me reading comics, you know, 30 odd years ago. And who said, you know, now I just have to hear a sting of the Alan Silvestri score and, you know, I start getting chills, and I do as well. And like that was when I think the first or second trailer for Endgame came out. I feel the same way coming out of that. And what really, really gave me joy was that huge mainstream audiences, and we're going to talk about billions of dollars worth of audiences, recognize that as well. Hmm. How good is that, Dave?
People on the street who aren't
film scholars, who aren't critics, who aren't fans, who do podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird story to tell, but like I went to the States recently and you go to the theme parks like Disneyland and Universal and like particularly John Williams of Harry Potter. You know, like you're walking around and you hear it from the speakers of the theme park and it's just like you know, it's so synonymous with it. Like it warms your heart because you know there are like thousands of people walking through this place every day and what they know more is the music. Like, you know, it's the music takes them there.
The music is one of the biggest pieces set. I mean, look, you know, and I can talk about this when we're signing out, but I'm happy to talk about the fact that I'm editing a book on Back to the Future right now. Same composer, Alan Silvestri. Yeah. My good friend Dave is writing the chapter on Alan Silvestri, which I know is why he's doing that. But you know, I'm editing this book, Back to the Future is a great film, hands down. Despite the fact that in Endgame they used the line "Back to the Future was a bunch of bullshit," but I think a large would that movie be the movie that it is if it didn't have Silvestri's score? With Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah, to me, when it comes, I got so much to say about it. But like when it comes to Avengers, it's so interesting because Silvestri has been there since Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yeah,
and the plot line of this film, not to go into it, is so appropriate for Silvestri.
Yeah.
So we can't really go into it without spoilers to a full degree, but
well, the phrase you used to me in the car on the way over here was about, you know, Silvestri being the first audience member.
Yeah, yeah. The composer is, in a way, the first audience member of a film. Like, they're the ones that get to sit there and watch it without the music.
Yeah.
And then they then create this conundrum where they have to set the tone and the feeling of the film for you. So in many ways, they're one of few people that get to see the movie in its most purest form then they add their own feel to it. So in a way, Silvestri, he feels the film for you. And when it comes to the Avengers with these iconic leitmotifs, they drive the film in a way that is way more powerful than it could ever possibly be without his music.
And it's not
so. It's 100% agreed. He is as vital to the movie. He's as much an auteur for the film than the Russos are.
Absolutely.
Then Feige is maybe more important than them, maybe.
Yeah, because he's given this that link through.
Yeah.
And it's not in the way that I think you, David, described. We were talking about older films a couple of weeks ago where you talked about Mickey Mousing the score, which is when, you know, the soundtrack tells you what to feel. It's not telling you what to feel. It's reflecting your feelings as an audience. Yeah. And there are points in this film.
And Mickey Mousing is sometimes like disparagingly used, but like what?
Yeah.
Oh, it's actually a phrase that comes back to the days of King Kong, actually. Yeah. Yeah. The original 1930s King Kong, where one of the people actually said, please don't Mickey Mouse the score.
Yeah.
Because the idea was like a Warner Brothers cartoon where it would actually go dun 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 dun.
I was gonna say, you know, we're talking about those really big dun 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 dun.
It actually walks you through the film and says, at this point, you should. Should be feeling this.
Yeah. Like every rom-com where they have the do-do-do-do-do.
And not to go too deep into it, like but the whole idea of Mickey Mousing is not as complex as it might be. Like but the idea of music as a language is. And so like the music in its best form is supposed to be a communicative thing between a composer and the audience. So how does the composer communicate with themselves? And that's like a tension, a conundrum.
I believe I actually have a...
But I just wanted to really just really quickly hammer that home is that Silvestri is not telling you what to feel.
Yeah.
He's communicating it to you.
He's giving you an emotion.
He's feeling it alongside you. So it's a little bit different to Mickey Mouse.
I believe I have a little bit of his original Captain America score here.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
I'm sorry, wrong one.
wrong pull.
Look,
wrong
we could go on about the score all day, but one of the things I highly recommend to everybody, you'll hear that theme again throughout the show. But one of the things I can highly recommend, we've all listened to and you guys turned me on to, was the Soundtrack Show. Mm-hmm. It's another podcast.
Ah, fantastic.
David W. Collins is the host of that. We'll take you through it in much greater depth than any of us could possibly do today. Not Endgame specifically, although I hope he does Silvestri's Endgame.
Well, he does Jaws over three episodes,
you know, and he did Back to the Future over three episodes as well. And so he really gets into that on a deep level, but reminds you how important soundtracks are to films. And that's what I was saying. It warmed my heart that audiences are responding to that as much as the iconic moments in the film.
And what is really interesting about this is the fact that there was a YouTube video released, I think it was last year or the year before, which was actually saying, why aren't Marvel scores memorable?
This is what I was going to bring up too. Yeah, like we can't forget that people were like really weak source to Silvestri's first Avengers theme.
Yeah, and I remember myself that when I actually saw the Avengers, I actually thought it's a little bit disappointing for Silvestri's score.
I remember thinking that.
It wasn't until the end credits when you actually had the Avengers theme in full. And I went, why wasn't that? And it was, but it was just so downplayed and it was just not given it wasn't given the time that it should have been given. And I had long discussions with, once again, my son, where I was basically saying the days of thematic scores that I'm giving, you know, Superman flying the da 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 da, you know, it's like or Rocky's training music or Star Wars, you know, and you look at all this Back to the Future, you know, all this themes where you actually really latch onto it. And the Marvel films did seem to have this kind of music is in the background, but it's not at the forefront. But my God, the Avengers theme has grown. It has it has matured. It has evolved.
But that's sort of the thing exactly, because like in Silvestri's first piece is that he's building all the themes slowly to that end point. So you only hear it in its full at the end.
And
it, you know,
to also build on that idea of a themeless Marvel universe, what was really interesting, one of the first things I noticed about Endgame was that all the individual themes are given air.
Yeah.
So like when you, once again, this is minor spoilers, but when you first see a character, I won't say who it is, but when you first see a character, in the background, you can just hear their theme from their individual film playing very lightly. And you sit there and go, we're actually bringing those themes back. And we recognize them because it's ingrained in us at this point. We may not have really paid much attention at the time, but it's ingrained in us.
I compare it to David Arnold's score for Casino Royale.
Yes.
Where because they were doing like a reboot of the Bond franchise, you kind of hear the dun, 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 and you don't hear the dun, 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 dun,
and Arnold
until the end of the
and Arnold specifically
film,
said
what he
said
becomes.
He
yeah.
wanted to develop him into yeah. Bond. So like, he had to earn the Bond.
He had to earn the John Barry thing. Yeah. That's the payoff for you.
Monty Norman, my friend.
Monty Norman theme, but yeah, John Barry did, but you you get that payoff at the end. And I think in very much the same way that Silvestri, except he gives you the gift of his own theme by the end of this film, to the point where you hear a phrase from that Avengers theme in this and you just have a big, you get chills, you get a big sloppy grin on your
there
face.
You go.
Totally. Now, I think that we've teased this long enough and it's time for us to get into some deep spoiler territory.
Please.
So let's get into this. So giving you, if you're driving, if you're doing whatever, we're giving you a moment now to-
We're dragging the show to a halt.
To a halt. Right, so we're all sitting comfortably now. So the sure beats our old spoiler vault, doesn't it?
I couldn't find the vault doors.
Right, yeah. I actually was looking for them because when we were doing our terrible bit of acting at the start of the show, I was trying to.
It's really dark in here.
Mewling Quim.
There you go.
There you go. So now we're back in the zone here. Now look. We heard for ages before this film came out that everything that wasn't in the trailer was a massive spoiler. And they're kind of right. That the trailer really only covers the first 10, 15 minutes of the film.
They were a little bit disingenuous. There are a couple of shots in the trailer which actually come later, but they're just shots. They're not actually story points or story beats. Mm. But
they're all
in
different costume.
Yeah.
I think, on the most part,
they did a really good job of just keeping us in the dark.
Yeah, and amazing story. So, you know, and I think fans need to be credited for not spoiling it. Australia did get it about 48 hours ahead of the US, and I think very few spoilers came out.
Yeah.
They did in random places, but those people...
Yes, and there were those people who were actually using the hashtag to actually encourage you to look at spoilers.
Those people are just dicks.
Yeah, they're dicks.
You know, but...
You can quantify it too. Like, you can go to Instagram and you can see like 900 comments on certain things, and you're like, wow, 900 people got spoiled by that one thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and I know it's just crazy. I mean, I think, you know,
I don't know why they didn't just do it worldwide everywhere.
I know, but we said it before. Yeah. We'll say it again. Don't read the comments.
Yeah, just don't. Like I personally was like really worried about it. You know, I spent like a day or two in the dark.
Yeah, literally.
No Facebook, nothing. No social media.
Sensory deprivation tank is the way to go.
So we will reiterate
even
one more time.
Even when you walk into the cinema, you're like, people are going to...
Yeah, we will reiterate one more time because we are now in a spoiler section. If you have not seen Endgame, if you do not want to be spoiled, stop this podcast right now.
Come back to it.
Come back to it after you've seen the film and you can hear what we have to say about it. But from this point onwards... All is fair game for the end game, and we will be saying things that are potentially spoilers and outright spoilers. Mm. So just please, at this point, we don't want to be part of the problem. You have been warned.
So, okay, well then the first big spoiler for this film, or the first big moment in this film that I didn't see coming at all, was that in the first 15, 20 minutes of the film, what's left of the team gets together and kills Thanos.
Yeah. he went for the head.
They went for the head. Yeah. You know, it is a depressing scene. It's such a somber first hour of this film. My friend Alex all credit for this idea that the film is very neatly parceled into three distinct acts over the 3 hours of the film. You have the first very downbeat hour, which is, you know, them... As a result of the snap, everything's kind of... How do we move on? We lost. How do we deal with that? The second hour of the film is the... And here's the next big spoiler, is the time travel segment of the film, of them trying to work out how to go back and how to fix things possibly.
Now, I have to credit this to one of my son's friends at AFTRS. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to listen to this show or not, but his name is Patrick.
But hi Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. I'm going to credit you with this because I think this is genius, but basically he said that the entire film is based on a Deus Ex rat.
Yes!
That if that rat hadn't actually did what it did, there's no film.
Yeah,
the film would have ended at that
point. So see the end of the very end credits of Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Yes.
Where Scott is lost in the microverse. the quantum realm, sorry. And obviously his two friends were dusted, so he got stuck in there for what turns out to be 5 years our time and
5 hours his time.
5 hours his time. The rat knocked some equipment and brought him back and his van was in storage in a really hilarious scene featuring Ken Jeong. And he brings it back.
Yeah, I was listening to the Slash Film podcast talking about this, and they were saying that it's pretty funny how many characters from Community have ended up in the Russo brothers.
Well, we were actually saying the only two that haven't been are Mikhail himself,
and Chevy Chase, and Gillian Jacobs.
Oh, Gillian Jacobs hasn't been in it. Well, right.
According to Slash Film, I have to look back into it.
Alison Brie was in one of them, wasn't she?
No, Alison Brie hasn't been in it either. But we've had not in a Russo, but we did have Donald Glover in Spider-Man.
Yeah. We did,
So he was in Spider-Man, but then we had...
there was the Dean in
The Dean in was in War. Yes. Civil War. Winter Soldier had Adept.
It was... Abed.
Abed.
Danny Pudi.
Yeah, he was in. He was
Who's the bald guy with the glasses? I've forgotten his name.
That's the Dean.
That's Dean.
Dean. So he was in Civil War.
He was in Civil War, yeah.
And this one has Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yes, she's in a very brief scene, yeah.
And Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
So look, I mean, so many Easter eggs in there, not just for Marvel fans, but for Russo Brothers fans as well.
Let's mention all the other cameos. Yeah. Holy crap.
And of course, we were talking about the three acts of this film. The third and final act is the epic. And I think I said in my review, this doesn't turn it up to 11. It goes one more.
Yeah.
It turns it up to a level hitherto unseen in cinema. I mean, this is you mentioned Lord of the Rings before. Yeah. This is Lord of the Rings
size
kind of finale. Literally, it's a Battle of Helm's Deep kind of epic finale. This is the movie we get, and 3 hours of it blinked by for me in a snap.
I mean, the scale. Whichever way you try to attack it, the scale's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they did it. And we all know, like, as well, like, that every one of these movies that they can't get all the cast together at one time, that it just has to, you know, be, like, sort of patched together in this tapestry of just, like, and where do you begin?
There is one scene where it kind of looks as though they patched people together. Yeah. It was at a funeral.
Yes.
Where clearly there was some CG to get some of those people in the same room together because, you know. But, like, you know, at that point, you know, I think they've earned a little bit of that. It was a huge cast. It was a huge cast.
Look, they basically brought in cameos from, I think, just about every film. And they had cameos. They had cameos of film people who I didn't think would come back for cameos.
Robert Redford was a really good example.
I don't think it was Natalie Portman.
I think it was B-roll from
Thor Dark World. I think they just picked a shot that they hadn't used before. But we had Rene Russo come back again.
Yeah. For a substantial speaker.
Yeah. Same with Robert Redford. Substantial. Crossbones came back again.
Can I say that the Winter Soldier tribute to this, because that was their first was such a beautiful moment, because you bring into I'm going to say this up front: time travel is always a cheat, right? Like it is the ultimate Deus Ex Machina. It's kind of like, oh yeah, let's go back and fix it. But the way they use it in this film is so beautiful, so elegantly done.
It's like so rewarding for us who've been watching all these movies over the time that we've been watching them.
That's exactly it. It's kind of like a tribute to itself.
Yeah. And the movies that they picked and where they decided to go.
And the ancient one, let's not forget Tilda Swinton. That cameo was
another cameo
phenomenal.
I didn't expect, which makes me really excited at the prospect of a Doctor Strange 2.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Look, the fact that where Doctor Strange has gotten to as a character through the two Avengers films, I am so jazzed for a Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah, the thing is it's been now 3 years since Doctor Strange, so it's quite a while since the first film, but he was so integral to the last two Avengers films that and he gets one of the best moments in this film. In the last act, where he just holds up a single finger.
What is it Peter Parker says at that one moment when he goes, I woke up and you weren't here, but the wizard guy said it's been 5 years and we've got to go.
I was thinking about that line from Infinity War. It's kind of like, there's some aliens here to steal a necklace from a wizard. Which is probably the best sum up of the first half hour of Infinity War. Like, you know,
my favorite is where he goes, there goes the wizard, kid, go get him.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once, like, so far, but that scene with Doctor Strange and holding up the finger is I think my favorite moment in the whole movie.
Yeah.
I can talk about this openly because, really quick, like it's almost like he's saying it to us. He's like, hold on.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's this is the one.
This is it. And it's like, we all know that we've all known in one way or another that Tony Stark is going to die. Like it's going to happen at one point. And that moment where like Doctor Strange puts up the finger is like the realization. It's like, you've known and here it comes.
Yeah.
And it's going to be okay.
This is and the reason why I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Because there's that line where he says, if I tell you, it won't happen.
And this film,
he almost breaks the fourth wall. Yeah. Like he almost like he's telling us, the audience, like it's coming. Yeah.
And that's what the Doctor Strange character can do because he is not fourth wall breaker in the sense of Deadpool.
Yeah.
He sees everything.
Yeah.
He sees all space and time, which means he sees, you know, to use a DC phrase, he sees Earth Prime as well.
It's like when he reforms, obviously from dust to being reformed on that alien planet. The fact that he says to Parker, it's been 5 years. He knows exactly how long it's been.
Yeah. It's my favorite. It's maybe my favorite moment of filmmaking in the whole thing. I'm struggling with another moment, but the...
Oh, we'll get there out moment. That's for sure.
Yeah. But I think for me, maybe the best moment of filmmaking is such as the tiniest little thing, but it's when Thanos realizes that there's no stones left in the Infinity Gauntlet and he in the Iron Man gauntlet, I guess, like when he just turns it around, like there's no stones in it. It was so great.
Yeah.
Thanos has
two reactions, actually.
I just really have to get it out. I can't sit on it. It's the biggest movie you've ever seen, like ever. Like the action at that last scene at the headquarters is just the biggest thing ever. And then it just, in the span of like 2 seconds, crunches like right down into just like one man holding a finger.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, holy shit. Like, how the fuck did, sorry for the language, but it's like, how,
we get one.
But it's like, how the heck boy did, you know, like, how the hell did they do this? It's like, it's a magician.
It's masterful filmmaking. It's
incredible.
So many little things paid off in that. Like, there's just one moment where, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp are there. And Captain America issues an order and the Wasp says, thanks Cap, we're on it. And they share a little look because it had been that whole running gag in Ant-Man and the Wasp about Scott Lang sort of constantly calling him Cap and her giving him shit for it, saying, you know, oh, it's Cap, is it?
Also,
which is a nice little payoff. Yeah, like, it's just also, little things
and
like
there's
that.
Also another line from her in Ant-Man and the Wasp where he goes, if I had asked you, would you have joined me? And she goes, if I had joined you, you wouldn't have been caught.
Yeah.
It's like they're finally working together in an Avengers type arena.
Yeah.
And they're working together. You know,
it's like, okay, coming together, right? So it's been 5 years in their universe, which I'm not quite sure how this does this mean that this movie's set in 2023? I'm not entirely sure. But that aside, there is this, there's a track on the soundtrack called The Portal or something along those lines. And this is basically this huge moment where all seems lost. Thanos has got a giant army coming through. We're assuming you've seen the films. You know what I'm talking about at this moment. And then portals start opening up.
And starting with the line,
you know,
on your left.
On your
left. Which is so important, okay, coming back to Winter Soldier.
Soldier again. And, you know, he's heard over the radio, Sam, you know. And then heroes from... And I can't think of a single one that didn't appear that has been in this movie. Start appearing everywhere. And a literal army... from the Wakandans to full of superheroes start appearing. I've got goosebumps thinking about my goosebumps.
You describing it.
This is the shit I mean where I'm like, I can't believe it exists.
Yeah. And this like is prior to this, just prior to this, we've had a massive smackdown between Cap and Thanos and Thor where after it being hinted at in what was that the second Avengers film called?
The Age of Ultron.
Yeah, that was the one. After that, like where Thor's hammer shifts a little bit, we finally get paid off that, Cap is worthy of holding that hammer as well.
And that is the superhero moment I was talking about. I actually welled up. Oh my God.
Can I actually reveal something? I cried twice in this film, right?
Yeah, me
so
too, yeah.
there was, but there, that was one of the, that was one of the first times where it happened. And I was, actually three times, I think. That was the first time it happened because there is this beautiful moment where it happens. And I was so like emotional at that point. And after these portals build up, there was a moment where I didn't know whether I was going to laugh, cry, cheer, or explode. Like, I literally was getting a little overwhelmed, where all these heroes are together for the first time. Cap is holding on to Thor's hammer and, you know, and a broken shield, and he finally utters the line, Avengers, massive beat, assemble. I just like, both audiences I was with just went nuts during this moment, and I just almost exploded inside. Like, this is, I can't overemphasize enough how important that moment has been after 22 films.
Yeah. You know. And coming back
to the whole last half an hour is just that.
Yeah.
Just moments like that over and over and over. They know exactly what you want and what you need. And then they do this filmmaking thing that I love, like that, where they give you this massive beat. Like, they give you this huge amount of time where they're like, it's coming.
It's coming.
Here it is. Here it is, guys.
And then it's downplayed. Yeah. He also doesn't call it out. Yeah. He goes, assemble.
Yeah. But it also comes from like a post. It's brilliant. It's so brilliant. It comes from, it's literally right after an hour straight of like undercutting all of them, like the last 10 years in such amazing ways. Like, all these great moments for us are undercut so hard.
Yeah.
Like when Peter Quill, like, you know, is caught singing to himself.
Yes.
You know, like, it's like these great moments that, like, you know.
So,
like,
he's an idiot.
Yeah. Like, at the time, that was the biggest thing in the whole world.
Yeah,
come and get your love. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, I remember you and I saw that together the first time, right? And that title drop moment in Guardians of the Galaxy, and you were just like, oh, we deserve this.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And then to undercut it with, like, this, you know, making it a diegetic score or him singing a cappella in a cave.
Yeah.
And
off key, going, so he's
an idiot.
That's why it's literally an hour of undoing all these past payoffs. And then it's nothing. Yeah, like you have like literally like the moment of Captain America, the First Avenger, where it's like, I can do this all day.
And he goes, I know.
Yeah, like.
That is America's ass.
That's just like, it's beautiful. It's amazing.
I would also say, as much of a Captain Marvel fan as I am, her arrival, my wife is sitting next to me. This is the impact that it has, having a female.
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, a female, powerful female character in a film. When the turrets all turn up and they go, something's entered the atmosphere, et cetera, the guns are firing. And when she hits Thanos' ship and goes through it, my wife beside me just goes, yes.
It's like, there you go.
There's
we'd
the
almost
power.
Forgotten about that character at this point. That's why it was. I mean, and my one criticism of the film, if I have to have a criticism, I don't have to have one, but if I was going to criticize one thing about the film, it's like, I think she's underused. I think Captain Marvel is underused.
I do too, but once again, this is where I think the balance is actually really good, because the film is about the original Avengers.
It's not about her.
Yeah. It is about those original Avengers, right up to them signing off at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is their film. And this is why we had to dust everybody else off, because this was about their character growth, their reconnection, their Tony and Cap pulling
the
back together.
There was an idea.
It was to stop paying Robert Downey Jr.
And she is way OP. I mean, let's face it, she is incredibly. But there's that one shot though, when she does come in, they use her so beautifully in that last 15 minutes that she's there, where Thanos headbutts her and she doesn't even
flinch. Yeah.
And the look on Thanos' face, like, what?
I really liked that sort of, you know, I thought she was used really well in the movie, personally.
I did too. I think she was, because I think if you'd had her there
the whole time,
throughout the time travel and all that sort of stuff, I don't think that would have worked as well.
It would have been like the quick fix for everything. It's like, we'll use the giant cannon, right?
Yeah, exactly. We'll use
her the whole time.
Yeah. But I thought that's kind of what it addressed, though. Like, maybe I've read it wrong. I need to watch it again. But I thought it was, like she came back and even she wasn't powerful enough to stop her.
Well, she wasn't.
Like the, because
it came down to them, you know?
For me, it was the only thing that, I don't know. I might be looking into it a little bit
too
much.
It's the exhaust port, right?
Yeah.
It's the exhaust port in Star Wars. Kinda. It's like, you know, you can have a giant thing to take out, that you can have a giant machine and you can get an even bigger machine to take out the Death Star, but sometimes it comes down to that one small act of heroism.
And you had her right at the very beginning of the film, she's going, you know, well, I'll go kill him. He goes, what do you think you can do? She goes, well, you didn't have me before, you know?
Yeah.
There's this cocksureness to her where she's basically like, I'll just take care of it. And then when she can't, it does come down to Cap and Iron Man. It all comes down to those two.
I need to think about it just a little bit more, but I don't know. What do you guys think? Because to me, it's like Tony is maybe one of the last people that's actually not powered. It came down to the person who didn't have any superpower, but his intelligence and his heart.
Because let's think about the other non.
Yeah, but to me, Tony Stark has always been like I mentioned on this show before. Absolutely, like it's always been like his heart is kept alive.
Yeah.
By his intelligence, and like in this movie, to me, I read it as like I don't know. I might be thinking too much about it, but he's always felt like a pretty selfish character. And that in this movie, he's the only one that sort of gets anything after the snap. He has the most to lose.
Yeah.
And so he kind of has to.
He gets a wife and kid, basically.
Yeah.
The most adorable child ever.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I mean, I think our friend Jorge would concede that it was one of the better child actors.
Oh, she was. Yeah. She was so cute.
Yeah. But it's sort of contrasted.
I love you guys, 3000.
Yeah. That's our review of the film, by the way.
Yeah. That's why I think we're so smart about it, because, like, I don't know. I really like Robert Downey Jr.'s performance as Iron Man since the beginning.
Yes.
And I think he's really amazing in this one in particular. Like, and so is Chris Evans and everybody else. Absolutely. Like, I don't have any problems with the acting, but Downey sort of carried this one for me.
Mm.
Like, in terms of how powerful it ended up being.
Mm.
Like, it's interesting because it's obviously this whole thing began with a contractual, like, and we can't keep sustaining $65 million for every actor. Yeah. Like, and you said Vin Diesel costs like $60
million. Yeah, did you read this, Richard?
For Groot?
Yeah. So apparently Vin Diesel was the highest paid actor on the set. Robert Downey Jr. got paid $50 million for the two films. Vin Diesel got paid $60 million for the two Avengers.
That's really so they can use his name on the marquee, right?
It is sickening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
he got paid this amount of money.
When you think of the budget of this film, well, the two films, was reportedly between $300 and $400 million. We've just accounted for $110 million of that budget.
Correct. Yeah. When you consider that Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth and so forth, they're all in roughly the between $7 and maybe $12 million. I think Scarlett Johansson was the next highest paid at like $15 million or something like that. And you look at it and go, and then you start getting into the stratosphere. Yeah. And you look at it and go, Bradley Cooper was paid like $7 million. And he's a major character compared to I Am Groot.
And how good is Rocket in this, brother?
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah.
But not to lose sight of that quote, because we just were talking about it for like 5 minutes, just the whole Captain Marvel coming in at the end and getting headbutted by Thanos. I think in my mind, it was by design. Like, it was to illustrate, like, you know, look, the power has already worked. Like, it worked. Like, he came down the opening scene and cut his head off.
Yeah.
Like, the power wasn't going to end this story or wrap it up.
Yeah.
And what's so powerful about it is that what really did was this one man learning to, like, essentially get over himself.
Because one of the things that,
like,
we get...
For the next generation, you know?
Yes. Well, what we get with the time travel is a beautiful moment between... Tony Stark and a younger Howard Stark, who is just about to have, like, he's
and they really spend so much time there.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're on the cusp, you know, Tony's about to be born and Howard Stark's actually nervous about being a father for the first time. And Tony Stark, as a father of 5 years, is able to turn around and give his own father some advice, but also get the really interesting admission that, you know, I was never really great. Howard says, I was never really great at giving myself to the greater good, which is where Tony's arc ends. Him going from the most selfish character in 2008, before he became Iron Man, to going through all this stuff where he got paranoid, where he went through PTSD after Avengers and not wanting to build an armor around the world, and still at odds with Cap at the start of this film, to finally learning, as we learned in Doctor Strange, it's not about you.
Yeah.
You know?
there's a world beyond me.
I think it's also that scene was also incredibly important because it also legitimized Marvel television. Up until this point, we've had Marvel cinematic people appear in, particularly Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. We've had their stars go over there to do a little bit of stuff on television. But this film, I think, is the first film which has actually had one of the television characters actually make a cameo in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which was Jarvis.
His chauffeur
was the original Jarvis from the Peggy Carter TV series.
Correct.
Which falls into that world. So we finally have something in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that says, the television stuff does exist.
Yeah, right. I suppose
is there, you know?
Besides Coulson, I suppose.
Well, Coulson started in the films and went to
Hell. That's true.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So it's always gone the other way.
But this
is the first time it's come back.
I mean, it would have been nice, and even though they've kind of written them off, if, you know, Daredevil and Jessica
Jones. I think
Jones
they should have walked through a portal, quite frankly.
You know, at one point. Just disappeared. We never had to see them again.
No.
Just have them turn up. Just have them and, you know, maybe some of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something turn up through a portal. Maybe, but that's a quibble. That it's is like the, you
look,
know.
And let's talk about quibbles very quickly. We all know that we love this film to death.
And times 3,000.
We love this 3,000. And there's, I've got two minor quibbles that I'm going to throw out at you guys and just basically say these are nitpicking quibbles.
Yes.
Let me please stress that they have no impact on my enjoyment of the film whatsoever. They're just, after a second viewing, they're the things I thought about. So their concept of time travel, which is based on three different real quantum theories about time travel that quantum scientists have niggled about and talked about with time travel, the idea of your past is actually somebody else's history, blah, blah. And, you know, it's kind of, and the idea that if you do something in the past, it doesn't affect what happens in the future because of different realities. And, you know, and there have been articles written where they say they didn't quite nail it, but, you know, it's the ideas are there. It's very clever. And I think on the most part, it worked beautifully. However, if we're going with that theory, how is Captain America
exactly
the end?
So the way this ends, I mean, you've all seen it. You all know that Cap goes back in time and ages to the point, you know, where he shouldn't be in their same timeline.
Because their Cap actually just went away.
Back,
he's now gone.
So it would imply that he has somehow affected their history.
Yeah.
Which means that, like, you know, things like Sharon would have grown up calling him Uncle Steve.
Correct.
And she probably wouldn't have snogged him, you know.
Well, it would also mean that that Falcon probably wouldn't be Falcon. And there's a lot of factors that if him growing old in that time stream, that means he wasn't there to affect all the other things that he could have affected. Therefore, the world would be a completely different place. So him being there was beautiful for the film. Because we needed that payoff that reality, but it didn't quite fit within their theory. Yeah, of
it's
time
a nitpick,
travel.
But it's still it's still a
really minor nitpick.
Would it break it if the prior to becoming old, like prior to coming to this current timeline and talking to, you know, Bucky and Sam, that he went back, said goodbye to Peggy, went back and reset it?
It sounds to me, judging by the last shot in the film, he went back after he put all the stones back.
Yeah.
He went back to the 40s and then grew old with Peggy.
Yeah, but then but then could he then not have gone back in that timeline, reset it, and then come?
He wouldn't be old then if he reset it.
Yeah.
So the problem is him being old, and it's a great scene.
It's
and
still a beautiful send off.
It's
for
a beautiful send off, and everything.
I wouldn't want it any other way.
It just, yeah,
I think,
no,
I think,
me either.
I think just take
and
it.
And he gets his dance.
It's a minor nitpick.
Yeah.
The other minor nitpick I have, and this is a slightly more plot driven nitpick, which is they mention several times. So it's not just a throwaway. Mention several times that they have enough Pym particles for one trip there, one trip back, right, and two test runs. Oops. One test run, right? They do all of that.
Yep.
How does Thanos come through the portal? He doesn't have any Pym particles.
Doesn't Nebula
Nebula fucks with the system, excuse my language, but she messes with
two
the system.
Not like we're monetized.
It's our last show. She messes,
now I've got to have one.
She messes with the system.
Fuck, where am I going to put mine in? Oh, wait.
She messes with the system, but he still requires the Pym particle because his ship shrinks and comes through.
Yeah.
Because it has to get really small to go through the quantum realm.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, look.
And it looks fantastic, and it's a great idea. But it is a niggle. It's a little nitpick.
Yeah, yeah.
And once again, this is just to show that we are human and we can
see
the little mistakes that happen.
It wasn't a mistake so much. I'm not quite sure. I loved the comedy of Fat Thor.
Fat Lebowski Thor.
He was total. Yeah, he was total Lebowski Thor.
Some of those scenes go on a little bit too long. But to me, it's like this is our last chance.
It's the greatest fat suit ever put on somebody as well.
It finally gave me a Thor body type to aspire to. That's
that
achievable.
Shot where he's in his robe, and you see him sneaking down the.
And I love that even when he's like got his hero moment at the end when he's double fisting, you know, Mjolnir and what's it called?
Stormbreaker.
He's still got the gloves on. He's still got his fingerless chill gloves, you know.
I was watching this is going to be a roundabout way of explaining it, but I was watching The Big Bang Theory the other night, and they have like one of the characters say, let's go watch Avengers in 3D. because then we can like pretend that we can imagine ourselves licking Chris Hemsworth's abs. And it sort of dawned on me. It was like, oh, this is interesting because like that seems to be like one of the major selling points of the franchise is like, look how hot Chris Hemsworth is. Go and watch Chris Hemsworth. He's going to take his shirt off. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
And he does.
And then here they are straight away. They make him as pathetic as possible. Yeah. And then they rob like what a lot of people have felt. It's like the one defining characteristic.
I don't think anybody cared.
No, that's I love Fat Four. Like I love
Fat
it.
Four was brilliant.
Yeah, like they couldn't have made him more pathetic.
I also love the fact that when he does the whole let's go get him lightning thing, his armor comes back on. You say he's still got his fingerless glove, but he's also still fat.
Yeah,
his beard is magically plaited in his hair.
They committed the whole way. They committed, which is amazing. But they rested on this.
And where they've left his character, he's kind of like happy with that.
Yeah.
I don't want to take away
the
PTSD. This is who I am, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really amazing what they did because the PTSD of him was not like disregarded for comedy.
No.
Like it was actually like a really quite severe like PTSD that he suffered.
Yes.
You know, and
same as Tony since Avengers as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it wasn't undercut. It wasn't this like fat, lovable slob. It was like actually like pretty
he was damaged goods. And can we talk about Robert Downey Jr.'s performance when he first gets saved and he's emaciated and he's thin?
Oh my god,
Danny is amazing.
And
he's
like delirious in his attack on Cap, and where were you, and I wanted to put armor around, and then he collapses. That performance is stunning.
It's amazing.
That is bravo, sir. There is
one other death we haven't spoken about.
Yeah.
Which is Black Widow, Natasha. How strict is that soul gem thing about sacrificing someone you love? Does bromance count? You know,
I guess that didn't go the way I felt it was going to go because Gamora's gone as well.
Yeah.
There's a version
of Gamora, and like I guess they hint that Peter Quill's going to go after her.
Because he's searching for her at the end. Yeah.
Like, I'm not quite sure about it because there were some things I missed. I've only seen
I love that line where she goes, him? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's the version of Gamora we have. We have the Gamora who hasn't fallen in love with Peter
yet. That's the Gamora from the beginning of Guardians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was something as well, like the hammer. Like at the end,
we don't know where that is.
But I
think it's on Peggy's mantelpiece.
But apparently he took it with him back in time.
He did,
and gave it back or put it back where it was supposed to go. Like I read a review where they mentioned this.
But I missed
that completely.
Like, of course, because he had to go there and put a stone back. So he
would have given it back to Asgard. Of course he would.
But I'm just saying, there's a lot of like things that feel like plot holes but may not be when I see it the second time.
No, I don't think there's a lot of plot holes. There's a couple of niggles just on little details like the Thanos. Mm. It's like, we got to get Thanos there. He doesn't have pin particles. Nobody will notice, It's like, we'll cover that by her manipulating the machinery.
I think there's a difference between plot holes and things like that are just narrative.
Deus Ex Rat.
Too many people call out plot holes when they're things that are just narrative convenience, and like, It's not to diminish comic books. We all love comic books. But at the end of the day, this is high fantasy. Like,
Why did that happen? Because comic.
You know, it's science fiction, not science fact.
It's 3 hours as well of like complete.
I hate to break people's bubbles, but we don't have nanotechnology because they can make armor and costumes out of nowhere.
No one has yet to meet an Asgardian god. No one, you know, it's like there are things that you just have to go with. Because they're fun, and that's what this movie is.
Yes.
How cool was Asgard as well? That it looked like a Norway town,
New Asgard.
How good was it to see Valkyrie again? And then she rides the winged horse.
Valkyrie's got such a great moment. Yeah. They all have
we didn't talk about A-Force.
A-Force, yeah.
Oh, dude, there's that moment where Captain Marvel has to get the thing fly through and they're going, she won't be able to do it alone. And once again, tying into Infinity War, she won't be alone. And every female hero character lines up beside her.
You know something really weird about this? That did not connect for me. It was every female hero.
It was all crazy of them. And it's like, you just go, yes!
Like the next day or whatever, like somebody pointed it out to me. I was like,
Really?
And there's like eight women on screen. It's like it's a massive moment.
To me, it was just awesome. Like crazy. I was losing my mind. Like,
and it
like,
was it was almost Marvel's middle finger to everyone who tried to review bomb Captain Marvel for that very reason. It's like, you know, we've been doing this for a while.
And we got a lot of them.
This is not our first rodeo. Oh, and also one of them was Rescue. Like we had Pepper Potts' Rescue in there. We had all these things that they'd been building to. Just there's so many things. And I think that This is really interesting because Marvel all the Marvel films up until this point have been with the end credits. We'll skip right to the end credits at the moment, which we've already said has that massive Silvestri score, has them all literally signing off.
No, what I love I love about that in particular is that we have all the other the portraits coming up, and we have all the people's names, but it's only the original five that sign off
on it. Yeah. Well, we have this literal sign off moment because all the other Marvel films have been looking forward. They've had their end stinger has been about this is what we've got coming up next. This is the possibilities of the future. This movie was so much about looking back, about celebrating what they've achieved and signing off on this current era to the point where there's no end credits. If for some reason you've listened to this episode and haven't gotten to, haven't watched the movie, there is no end credits stinger. There's nothing going forward. There's a little audio sting at the end, which is a callback to Tony's Iron Man making his first suit in a cave.
You just hear the hammer.
Yeah,
that is literally the only thing we get at the end of the movie because this is, for all intents and purposes, or indented purposes.
And there's no word saying we'll return.
No,
thank
God. This is the end of the saga. There will be other Marvel films. We know there's Spider-Man Far From Home coming out. That'll be the epilogue.
Apparently, Phase 3 ends with Spider-Man. Yeah. That's the last.
So I like. Yeah, I'm imagining it's gonna be big movie, but it'll be an epilogue to this.
Yeah.
Apparently, picking up 5 minutes later or something. Mm. So this is the
Hi,
end.
Peter Parker.
You know. So let's just take a moment, celebrate the fact that this is the end of a story that we have been watching for 11 years.
Yes.
You know.
We can't possibly cover it all. It's crazy. I mean, like how important to this movie, like the Hawkeye and Widow are, and
can I just touch on that for 1 second? The Hawkeye thing
and Nebula.
Yeah, Nebula.
This is Nebula's movie as well.
Nebula, but also I love the fact that the Russos, before we get into the joyous look at us, we've got a million superheroes on screen, we have that one moment right at the very beginning of the film. The opening scene of the film is almost like they're taking a dagger and saying, remember how you felt at the end of Infinity War? Here's one more. The Hawkeye and the family scene and the family dusting in front
there
of
there were
him.
So many gasps the first time I saw
yeah,
that.
And it's like,
I think in both sessions.
It's like there's part of me that kind of went, well, that was gratuitous. You know,
but saying, the first hour of this film is just...
And then,
somber. Like it's,
and how Stark is.
Yeah.
Like emaciated and spaced.
Everything in that opening scene is so, and the Black Widow and her peanut butter sandwich, you know.
Because they don't take away that loss. It's like, they lost.
Yeah.
They
what
probably
about
lost.
Captain America in group therapy?
The taco. the taco.
Oh, beautiful moment. I love
Professor Hulk. Like, we didn't even mention Hulk.
Yeah, like his little Shrek references when he was dabbing, you know. And there was
I loved when he had to like pretend to smash things.
I remember I read somewhere someone was saying, like, when's a good time to pee in this film? And someone said, I don't know, maybe when the Hulk's having breakfast. But even they said, even that is like such a fun scene.
What,
like,
is it, Nebula says when she first arrives? She goes, she says, Rhodey, careful, there's an idiot on the
I don't know. Scott's just sitting out the taco.
I said it to you guys, but I got real Lou Ferrigno vibes during that breakfast scene. Taking the selfie and everything.
I know.
Hello, regular size guy.
I'm the Hulk. I'm the Hulk.
Look.
You want a photo of Ant-Man?
We could literally go into every scene of this film. Yeah. And maybe one day in the future we will do a one Endgame minute podcast where we talk about this.
No.
No.
Let's do one hour for every second. Oh, what do you reckon?
Somebody's in the studio.
Hey.
Oh, wow.
If someone's behind me and they're going to kill me, give me a heads up.
Now. Okay.
That's what it sounds like though, doesn't it?
It does. I don't know what's banging around out there. Anyway, can't hear it on mics at all, so it doesn't matter.
We probably need to start wrapping this thing up because we've been talking about this almost as long as Endgame was. Let's suffice it to say, this is the Endgame to end all Endgames.
I don't know what's going on there. We got banging and stuff.
Happening at the back there. We love this film.
Oh, it's a cat.
look, and the 5 stars that we give this film is a not just for this film, but for the journey that took us there.
Absolutely.
It is a body of work in the same way that, you know, Return of the King got the Oscar, but really it was those 3 films that won it.
Can I just say as well, though, that it's over now?
Oh, yes.
I think it's very sad.
Yeah.
Hey, I got one thing to add quickly on this. The, you know how Black Panther went crazy with all the Oscar noms?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you think this has got a...
I hope so.
Oh, look, yeah. It deserves so many things. As we said, Silvestri, if he doesn't get the score nomination, I'll be rioting in the street. I don't think anyone will notice me. They'll see a crazy bearded man. Yeah, but true. You know.
I'm really hoping
did you copy my beard?
I'm really hoping that this is the film. I know we said
who's
about,
in charge
we
said, now?
We said about
just can I just one thing. Thor just kind of placating Quill at the end or Quail as he calls him. Just going, it's you. Yeah. Yeah. I love that version of Thor.
Yes. Like, he's such an arrogant twat. look, I think I'm going to sum this up and basically say I think this has been a magnificent journey. I think if they don't pick up something at the Oscars for a job well done, I'm not even talking about one film, but a job well done for 10 years worth of films, I think they deserve it.
Bring back the honorary Oscars for this.
Like, I think Feige should get an honorary Oscar.
Yeah.
He's
got one in our hearts.
Producer of the decade. Yeah. You know,
if we were in the Academy, he's already won our hearts.
But yes, I thought it was fantastic. Go see it.
Go if you haven't. Well, we're assuming you have. See it again.
Why was it called Endgame though?
Oh, because
Stop, you fool.
So I think we can wrap this up conclusively. Go and see it. We love this film. We've loved this journey. This is the end of panels as well, though. This is the end game for us, which means I think I have to die. I'm looking forward to see. You know, tell me who turns up to my funeral.
What should we put in a little reef to go down the river? Like, what would it be for you, Richard?
Copy of his book.
Copy of my book. With like proof that Richard has a brain.
Can I shoot it with an arrow?
I don't need to set my book on fire as it floats out to the... Nice one, Dave. I think this is the end for us, and we just want to thank you all for who are listening now or who listened to the show from when we started this back in, 2011, 2012. This series was important to us because we all met around like Thor when it came out.
The first Thor,
The first Thor came out, and that was such an important film for us for so many reasons, but this podcast wouldn't exist without this cinematic universe.
Correct.
Between that and the New 52 are the two reasons. One of them's lasted.
Yeah, well, I think what it was we met each other at the Thor press junket and then all discovered that we were comic book fans.
Yeah.
And we all started talking about comic books and everything else. Our love of all things geek. And we just formed a very, very tight friendship. And this podcast was inevitable, as Thanos would say.
Yes, but I am Iron Man. But the thing is, this show is ending, which is sad in a way. Mm-hmm. But we kind of really formally ended it a couple of years ago with a big live show. But we had to do this. Yeah. We will be doing other podcasts though. So I don't know how much we can talk about those now.
I'll say is that I didn't put as much effort as I had for the last 2 weeks getting the studio ready for it all to stop and end. We have, and we're going to be a little bit cagey here because we don't want to give too many details away, but we have two shows that are in planning.
Yes.
I would say they were going to actually be on very different feeds and everything else. So follow us on Twitter.
You can find me at DVD Bits. I put I'm so Twittering.
I'm David McVeigh.
We fired the writer, but then we brought him back.
Right.
Yeah.
I got Ron Howard in for a while. That was very weird.
I'm at David McVeigh on Twitter, and you're on Twitter as well.
At Dave Longo.
So follow us on Twitter for any updates because there will be different domains and different feeds and stuff like that. Yes.
We'll be okay.
So we do have these two projects that are going to be coming to fruition. Now, one will probably be coming a little bit sooner than the other one.
Yep.
But within the next, I would say within the next month, we're probably going to have something.
Yeah.
Just bear with us. This isn't the end of us. We've been on a very long break. And I understand we've been you guys out there have always been... kind of at the back of our minds the whole time.
Yeah.
And we took us a while to figure out what we wanted to do. And now we know kind of what we want to do. So we're going to be back. So just bear with us.
Dave didn't put this whole studio back together just for this.
No. Well, you know, anything to get you guys over to my house, whatever. But
that's the thing. Look, and honestly, this podcast was an excuse for us to hang out as much as anything else.
Yes.
And we like hanging out, so we may as well record things while we're doing it.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah. And so, look, for the final time, thank you all for listening. You know where to find us online because we just told you. But I guess this is behind the panels endgame, or hashtag panels endgame. if you're spruiking this. But I guess for the thank you both for making this one of the things I'm most proud of to have worked on over the last.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah,
for putting this show together over the
Feige. He's the Feige. he's
our Feige. Yeah. No.
I have a plan through to 2023, guys.
He's still got all his hair though. So.
And also, look, we played a clip for Stan Lee up front. We lost him this year. May he rest in peace. Mm-hmm. He is an architect as much as Kevin Feige for this thing as well. Although, read Marvel the Untold Story for a little bit more on that. Well,
that's of course how we're going to end. Hey, yeah. a slam of Stan Lee.
the Stan Lee cameo in this is like a beautiful send off to not just Stan.
Can I also say about Stan Lee in particular, though, I mean, he will be greatly missed. But if you do read Marvel Untold Story, which I read a few weeks back, his focus throughout the 70s all the way to his death was about getting his comics on the big screen. That was his one passion. Mm. He wasn't, after he finished publishing as such, he was still involved in Marvel, but that was his focus.
He moved
to LA away from Marvel HQ just to try and get the films made.
There's a bit where they're talking about the fact that they really want to have Marvel owning the production arm of, because they know comics better than anybody else, and they couldn't envisage that happening, at that time. Marvel Studios and the MCU is that dream come to life, and Stan has been in every one of those.
He must have been so proud,
before
he died, of what it had finally got.
Yeah.
So
to him, to all the creators involved in making those characters, to all the people involved in the films, from the actors to Kevin Feige, of course, to the Russo brothers, to all the directors that have been involved in this, from Jon Favreau, who started this as the first director in the MCU, right through. Thank you, as from the fans.
Absolutely. And thank you to Joss Whedon for giving us the first Avengers, the first actual
bringing them
group.
Together, yeah. So, look, for the final time, thank you all for listening. I'm Richard Gray.
Dave Longay.
David McVeigh.
And this has been Behind the Panels.
Behind the Panels is a production of GeekActually.com.